You're listening to the Missionary Perspective Podcast with veteran missionaries Eric Johnson and Joshua Mead. We're glad you could join us. We trust this podcast will be both a blessing and a challenge as we relate topics in world evangelism from a missionary perspective. Now, here's Josh and Eric.
Well, welcome to the Missionary Perspective Podcast. We're back again. I don't know if this is season 2, 3, 2.2, whatever you want to call it, but Josh, there is probably not a subject matter that I'm more excited about that does not have to do with the Bible than talking about food. We're going to talk about food today. I'm excited about this.
What's on the menu? That is the question for today. And there are very few topics that will get pretty universal excitement and passion than the topic of food. And I think as a missionary, food is such an integral part of your cultural identity, of learning about your country. So yeah, today we're talking about all things food. Now, what did you have to eat today, Eric? Did you already have lunch?
I did. I had lunch. My wife made some great, it's a chicken and rice dish that's very similar to the Dominican here with a spinach salad with, she had almonds and grapes, and it was a very good lunch.
Excellent. Yeah, we were out this morning. We're in Michigan right now. And so we found a little breakfast restaurant. I had some eggs Benedict. I always try to get that anytime I'm out if there's a breakfast. So yeah, we're back in the States. So we're, enjoying.
But even though I've just had lunch, I have a feeling by the end of this podcast, I'm going to be hungry again.
I would imagine, because we're going to share a little bit. Well, man, as I was reflecting on this topic, I was just, going back and just thinking about our early days when we were first learning the culture, when we arrived in Senegal. And I think about how much food is a part of the culture of the country you live in. Your food culture has a lot to do with the availability of food products. So that's going to tell you a lot about agriculture. It's going to tell you a lot about what kind of jobs people have, because what kind of food are they producing? It tells you about their religion. There's a lot of religious practices that go into preparation of food, what foods you can and cannot eat. And then even just the way that the traditions that surround the way food is prepared, the way food is served, the way you sit, the way you eat it, all of that makes up the identity of the food culture of the country you're in. And really, going all the way back to just as a child, food is really a part of how we develop our personal identity. Think about it. Food is one of the things as a kid, you start to realize, I like this, I don't like this, I want some of this, I don't want that. And you start to develop your personal identity. And then it's a way that we connect with people. I was just at a church in Georgia, a church that supports both of us there. And there was a gentleman from Pakistan, and he came up after I had presented the work in Senegal and was sharing some of the stories. And he said, man, I really related to some of what you were talking about. He shared some of his story of some of the difficulties of living in his country and then moving to the States. And I asked him, I didn't ask him about specifics, but I simply said, when's the last time you've had a good meal? And he knew exactly what I was talking about. And he said, man, it's hard to find Pakistani food. And, here. And his whole demeanor changed, right? Once he started talking about his home country's food and all of that. So I think food and culture will teach you a lot about food, the community. I tell missionaries, when you first get to a field, pay attention to how it's eaten, pay attention to how it's prepared, how it's served, because and we'll get into a minute kind of our, unique experiences we've had. But I think that food is not just an aspect of your physical growth. Obviously, you need to eat to survive. But there's a lot of social and spiritual growth that goes into it. We'll share some of Senegal's uniqueness with how food plays a role in that. But you look at the ministry of Jesus, How much did Jesus' outreach with people revolve around meals and feasts and things like that, right? And so how important is, in your culture, how important is national dishes and food? How does that play a role in daily life where you're at?
Yeah, definitely Dominicans have their particular food that they like. There are routines. When we spent time going on trips ahead of time, survey trips, I think it was maybe a little bit lost on me the importance. It's not necessarily like a Middle Eastern or Eastern type of thing where you're sitting around and eating together, like, you know, at a table with your hands in it kind of thing. But one of the things in the Dominican that's very interesting is that the lunch hour or lunch hours, if you will, like from 12 to 2, is kind of universally blocked out. Most businesses between 12 and 2 are closed. People go home and they're not necessarily eating for 2 hours, but it's kind of that 2 hours. You know, you think in some cultures it's a siesta. I don't so much they think they're sleeping, but it's more of a restful time. But food is definitely an integral part of that. In fact, you'll start smelling people preparing food around 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning when they're starting to boil the different things and you start smelling the spices. You know, for our Dominican, your average lunch is always, always, always going to have rice and beans, and really good, very tasty, very flavorful rice and beans. It can be black beans. It can be red beans. It can be white beans. But it's going to have rice and beans. They're going to have some sort of meat, chicken, could be goat, could be beef of some sort, and some kind of sauce. Sometimes it's pork. And then you're going to have some sort of salad. It can be like a cabbage salad. It can be a leafy green salad. It could be potato salad. But they're going to have a salad. And that is the staple every single day for lunch. Like, if you don't get your rice and beans, like, there's actually a problem. And we can talk later on about funny stories. But I do remember one of the first times when I had my first barbecue with men on a Saturday afternoon. And I wanted them to get the full experience, you know, and I was very excited about this. And I had made hamburgers and we had fries. And I mean, we made everything. It was really, you know, just we went out all out thinking what we would do over in the States. And I remember the men sitting around the table and looking at all this food and thinking, wow, this is really good. This looks really good. But I don't remember who it was. One of the guys looked around and he's like, where's the rice and beans? Like, you're like, Pastor, we can't have lunch if there's no rice and beans. Even with hamburgers and hot dogs and, you know, all these different fixings we had, it really wasn't going to be lunch until you had rice and beans. And so that's a staple for them. And really, you know, they call it la bandera. They call it the flag. That's the word for flag, meaning like that's the essential daily thing we do. Now, dinner, we can talk later on. Dinner's different. Breakfasts can be different, but that lunchtime, you know, you're usually together with some part of your family. You've usually left your job, your home for 2 hours. That life kind of centers around that lunchtime menu. So I don't know what it's like there in Senegal, but that's what, you know, the daily in and out is like. You have to be home for your afternoon lunch with rice and beans and some sort of meat.
Yeah, I think that's such a that's a most of the world functions that way, where they have their staple. Pastor Malik, our lead pastor of our church in Senegal, he commented one time to me and said, if I go 2 days without chebijen, the national dish, he said, if I go more than 2 days, there's going to be a problem. Like, I've got to have that fish and rice. And so it's such an essential part. And it's amazing to me that, in a lot of these countries, and you know, whether it's poverty that is the reason why you're limited to what you can eat, or whether it's just the fact that that's what's available, and people develop this love and passion for those staple dishes. Now, growing up, and I'll mention this, just the first thing that started really amazed me about our culture is how they can eat the same dish every day and be just as excited about it as they were the day before. And, you know, kids will be like, what do we have? You know, neighbor kids, what do we have in chebijen? Fish and rice. Yes. You know, and then the next day, what do we have in chebijen? Yes. You know, they're so excited about it. And so, there's a lot of, you know, national pride to it, cultural identity, you know, your cultural pride. that I think is really important. But so growing up, let me ask you this. Growing up, did you, as an American, did you eat a wide variety of different types of food? I know I did. My mom is a wonderful cook, and she made all sorts of different dishes. So I grew up with no, you know, this isn't a staple for the Mead family. We ate everything. And getting to Senegal, it's like, all right, you know, the same thing every day. We have amazing food. But for an American, that was one thing to get used to. How was that adjustment for you? And do you guys eat a variety of things?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely growing up, you know, now as a 40-plus-year-old, I realize how my mom did such a great job on a very shoestring budget. We were not wealthy by any means. We were, in fact, we were probably, many of the years I was at home, we were pretty poor.
Right.
But she did a great job. She's a great cook and did a great job of having a great variety. But it's interesting, like, you're right. Like, I think in America, we like variety. We for whatever reason. Now, I will say there are different cultures, even in America. I have family members on the side where I married, where they tend to like a much smaller menu. And I think maybe just growing up, we just like to try lots of different things. So, yeah, we had a wide variety. But I will say here, you're right about probably the reason rice and beans is a main staple is that it's very economical. That's for sure. And it can fill you up. But with that in mind, as I sit back now many years into the culture, I realize how many different varieties of the food that they make that is simply rice and beans, right, and how they can make the minutiae of even putting rice and beans together as a meal. And it's really funny for me when we go back home to the States, usually after about 2 or 3 weeks, my kids, who three of the four of them were born here, and Ashley's 15 and she spent 14 of her 15 years here, how much they start asking, Dad, when we could get some real rice and beans? And inevitably we'll go somewhere and somebody's has rice and they'll get rice. And I'm like, they're not going to like it. They're not going to like this rice because it's not Dominican rice. And sure enough, like, Dad, this rice is awful. What's wrong with this rice? And they're just used to Dominican rice and beans, which is very good.
Yeah, it's true. My wife called me the other day. I was down in Georgia and we were chatting and she said, Ryder, my youngest, he's 6. And he woke up. She said, yeah, he woke up. We're getting ready for school. And she said, Mom, when Dad goes back to Senegal in December, can he bring back some chebijin? I really need some chebijin. And so it's really neat that, yeah, they have that connection and that longing for it. And I think, yeah, a big part of it is, you know, what most Americans don't realize, and most of us do, we understand that how convenient and how much access we have to a wide variety of different cuisines. And I love that. I love trying new foods. I love trying different varieties. Yeah. But it's convenient. It doesn't take all day to prep. And part of the reason why most countries have specific staples that they put twists on, but it's always the same staples, is because it's an all-day process. Now, I know the women to prepare food in Senegal, you know, they're starting around 11 o'clock, prepping the vegetables, prepping the chicken, and everything from slaughtering the chicken, buying the fish. You got to go 6 in the morning to get the fish. And it's an all-day process just to prepare the meal. And that develops such a sense of community among the families that are preparing it. Or when you have big festivals and get-togethers, the women sit outside and they're prepping the vegetables. And it's just such a unique aspect of that culture that I love. My wife was telling me that that was really the easiest way for her to make those initial connections with our host culture, was to sit down with the women and ask them, how do you do this? How do you make it? And I think that being able to make that connection, it not only can you build relationships around food, it not just by enjoying their food, but by learning how to prepare their food, it really opens up hearts. And I think about Ryder too. When we eat at people's houses, we'll be done eating, and then Ryder will start making his way. We all eat out of the same dish, whatever dish is prepared. And he'll start, when everybody's done, he'll just make his way around the dish, finishing up everybody else's spot. And we always tell him, Ryder, don't do that. And the host, every time they'll say, no, let him eat. You know, they love it because there's this kid just enjoying their food and eating it up. And so they get a good big kick out of it. But it really does open hearts up. So is it an all-day process prepping these meals for the afternoon, or does it not take too long to make those dishes?
Well, handful of times we've had ladies who work in the house. At this juncture, we don't, but we've had people when we had smaller kids, and they would come in, and usually around 8 o'clock, 8:30, they'd start, making the beans, because there's a lot of different steps to that. We're not just cooking it, but you put a lot of spice in it and the different kinds of, peppers and gourds and things like that. And then the rice takes a little bit of time, and obviously cooking. So yeah, we're talking 2-4 hours worth of prep. We really love Dominican food. And what you were mentioning, I'll kind of go back to that, is it's so true. Church members really want us to be pleased, Holly and I, and us to enjoy their food. But it goes up another level when our kids come over and really like their food. There are different things Dominicans make here. It's a soup, but lots of different kinds of vegetables and meats in it called sancocho that our kids absolutely love. And I'm thinking of a time when people have invited us over and our kids are getting second and thirds. And normally we wouldn't let our kids do that, but because it makes those people so proud, that's something that they take a great pride that the American kids are there and they love them. And there's something else really, really neat at Easter time called habichuelas con dulce, which is just sweet beans. It's like sweet beans in like a bean soup, and it's chilled. It's not going to be warm, and it doesn't sound like it would be really awesome, but it's got like cinnamon and stuff, but it is. It's great. I mean, the 19-year-old Eric would never think that. The 46-year-old Eric thinks that's really great. It's really great, a delicacy at Easter time. And so it's one thing when we like it as the missionary, we've chosen to be missionary. It's the other thing when our kids who've grown up with it love it, and they kind of it really gives them that connection to the culture, and the people really respond well to that.
Yeah, certainly. And I, my first experience with that was back in college when I was in Canada. A guy who would poutine and all the other different dishes, pierogies, for example. One of the first week we were there, they served pierogies, and I had never heard of a pierogi. And I thought, what is a pierogi? And there was a roommate of mine who was Dutch background, and he had a passion for pierogies. And he just starts going into the history of pierogies. He talks about where they're from and all this and that. And I'm just standing there stunned by this 15-minute monologue he's giving about pierogies. And then another friend of mine standing there said, Josh, it's just kind of like cheese-filled potato, like pastry things. And I go, okay, that's all I wanted to know. But in another time, we were invited to another friend of ours. He was taking college courses. His name's Tuan Bui. His wife is Kim Phuc. They're from Vietnam. She's pretty well known. She was the girl in the photo when her village was bombed with napalm. It burned her pretty severely, and God has given her a national platform. She travels around and speaks about God's forgiveness and love. Well, they invited us over, and they were able to get their grandparents out of Vietnam and over into Canada. Her parents owned a Vietnamese restaurant in Vietnam, and so they prepared this massive meal for my friend and I when we got to their house. And a delicious, authentic Vietnamese food. It was amazing. So as a young college student, man, I'm just down in it. I'm eating and eating and eating. And I'm probably on my third bowl. And my friend who was with me, he was barely touching his meal. He's kind of, eating a little bit. But he was asking the grandpa all these questions about his testimony, about life in Vietnam, how he had gotten out. And it was funny because as I'm eating, I'm not the one asking the questions. My buddy is. But the grandpa is just loving it that I'm enjoying the food. I mean, I'm over there just, oh, this is so good. So he's answering the questions, but he's answering me. He's watching me. Like, he's sitting next to me, just loving it. He's got this big smile on his face as I'm eating it. And my buddy's on the other side of the table asking the questions, but he's responding to me because he's like, yeah, this kid, man, he loves our food. And so that really stuck with me that, man, you show a genuine appreciation for their culture, for the food, where you're at. And it really goes a long way to making that connection. Let me ask you this. with the food and the culture. Are there any faux pas? Are there anything you're not supposed to do when you eat? Okay. Sit down a certain way or start, or what are some with traditions? What are some things you're not supposed to do when you eat?
It's interesting. I would say Dominicans, especially like when you go to restaurants, my wife gets on me. She's like, you eat so much like an American, like you just kind of attack your food, you devour it, you know, yeah. Especially if you're eating like a sandwich, you know, maybe more in a fast food setting. You know, Dominican, you'll see them, they'll eat very properly out of like what you would call, like if you're having a chicken sandwich or a hamburger, they won't be touching the food with their hands. They'll be using napkins or they'll be using the covering of it. And they're very well mannered when they're eating. And I say that because maybe I'm just not. And my wife's always like, you're a barbarian, you know, stop eating like that, you know, especially heaven forbid I get a chicken wing, you know, she's like, then she doesn't even want to be around me. And so I would say, yeah, they're very much they're very mannerly when they eat. But I can't think of any necessary faux pas that are coming to my mind. What I will say is very interesting is a lot of times in America, we would be in a setting, let's say we're at a barbecue where someone's cooking something on a grill, and we might have some appetizers out on a table or whatever, and you know, you're eating whatever. But usually the way we would do it in America is we got to wait for them to finish what's on the grill, bring it in the house, and everyone says sit down and eat. It's not really how they do it in the Dominican. Even in a, you know, pretty affluent homes I've been in where they're cooking at the grill, you kind of the guy cooking, if you're the guest, who kind of make you something, try this, you know, and you're kind of trying as you go. So everyone kind of congregates around the grill. It could be the nicest house in the neighborhood with this ornate, you know, eating area, but you're probably going to eat out by the grill. And if you're not paying attention, you may not get some of the good stuff. So it's funny the little differences you find.
Yeah, certainly. You know, you're talking about manners and everything. In Senegal, you serve, you have one dish. And so you have your section where you eat out of. And a lot of times, now a lot of people use spoons now, or you eat with your hand. You never reach in with your left hand. That's both religious reasons why, and then it's just other cultural reasons. So what I found interesting, because at first I thought, man, you must be spreading a lot of germs, even with a spoon, because, you know, you eat your food, but then when you want a piece of meat or a piece of sweet potato or a piece of cassava root, you reach over and you break, you know, you take a piece off with your spoon and then bring it to your section. And as I started paying attention to the way people ate, I noticed that there's this method that they use that I wasn't using that I've tried to develop. Whether it was with their hand, they'll take a ball of rice, they'll squeeze it together till it's kind of like in a ball. And then they'll grab a piece of chicken or a piece of fish. And then when they put it in their mouth, they have a way of doing it that their lips don't actually touch their hands. And the same with a spoon. I've noticed they'll scoop up the fish or the rice with the spoon. And then they put it in their mouth, but they use their top teeth to spoon it off without actually touching the spoon. And so there's less cross-contamination as you're serving and grabbing, you know, different things. One thing they'll do is the hostess will always serve the meat, and that she will cut it up, portion it out to everybody. And usually the guest, if you're the guest of honor, they're going to give you half of the meat or half of the fish. They'll put it in your section. Now, the proper thing to do is to take it and put it back in the middle, and then they'll put it back. You do that, you know, you'll go back and forth a few times. And then once, maybe three times when you have that big portion, then you can take a chunk off of that after a few minutes, take the chunk off that you want, and then start passing it around. Sometimes they'll give you all of it. If it's a poor family, they have very little protein on there. And so they'll give you all of the meat. And you'll accept it, but then you wait until about 10, 15 minutes in, then you take off your little portion, and then you put it back and trade it around.
Wow.
And then once, the longer you're there, then, you know, I start serving other people after a certain amount of time. Another unique thing is the youngest child, he will place his left hand on the edge of the plate. And I asked one time, because you're not supposed to touch the plate at all with your left hand. And but then I noticed the youngest child at a family's house, he had his hand on the plate. And they said, oh, that's just a way that we show respect, that he's not rushing in. He's, you know, it's just a way for the child to remain calm and not rush in and try to eat too much and things like that. So little nuances like that that you pick up in the way that they prepare it and serve it. I think about a missionary I spoke with. We were in a conference together. He was over in near Australia, one of the islands out in that area. And he said, you know, the way they serve, the women always go last if it's a buffet-style meal. So they send the men go through line first, then the children, then the women. And he said, my dad, who was pastoring at that time, he said, my dad told the church, hey guys, we're going to do it American style this time. We're going to have the ladies go first, then the men, then the children, then the men. And one of the deacons leaned over and said, hey, pastor, are you sure about that? I don't know if that's a good idea. He said, no, let's do something. You know, this is the way we do it in my country. And he had been there a long time. And so he said, we're going to do it this way today. They said, okay. The women went through and there was no food left. They took it all. But it's because the reason they go last is because they clean up what's left. They finish the food. So everybody takes what they need. Nobody goes back for seconds. They take what they need and then the women clean it up. And so I thought he said, well, I never did that again because there wasn't enough food for everybody else. So yeah, little things like that that you pick up on that are important to the culture and to eating. And yeah, definitely. Are there any Dominican restaurants when you're back in the States that you've gone to that you're like, all right, this is pretty close to authentic?
So I haven't been able to find any. I'll find something that's close, like a Cuban restaurant that have a lot of similarities. In fact, if you don't go to necessarily New York City, maybe Miami, it's really hard to find a contingent of Dominicans. That's kind of the two grouping areas. But I have talked to a gentleman in the DC area, and he was just telling me as a baseball writer I'm in contact with, and he's Dominican. And he was telling me about this great Dominican restaurant in DC that we're gonna have to go out together because he wants me to try some good Dominican food in the DC. But he said, you know, all the ball players from the Washington Nationals knew about it and that's where they would go hang out. And so it is funny how word of mouth gets around and you start spreading, you know, different, you know, hey, go check this out. But no, it's hard to find when you're back in the States if you're not in certain areas of the country where you find that nationality.
Yeah, I've found a lot in a lot of major cities. There's some great Senegalese restaurants just down in Atlanta. Atlanta had four, and I went to one of them. And man, it was pretty authentic chibujin, the fish and rice dish. It was delicious, and it was a neat experience. So I'm always trying to look and find as we travel around the country.
Yeah, you do what we do because you probably don't find this as many when you come to America. There's a lot of Spanish churches. And so Hispanic churches. And so when we come back and they'll have, you know, an International Sunday where, you know, you got people from Guatemala, people from Venezuela, people from the Dominican, people from Cuba, and they make all these dishes. Now that is really great because you get a taste of the world that way. So we enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, it's definitely it's a big part of the culture. If you're a young missionary going to the field, you know, to just pay attention. That's really the first avenue to start getting used to the culture. And then there's, you know, dig deeper into that. For example, there even with last names, there's certain last names that they joke around that they like certain kind of foods. And so if I meet somebody who's really like, oh man, they're digging in, I'll go, ah man, you're a Jope. When Jope is one of the last names, and the Jopes love chebujin. And so there's different last names you can play around with, and you can, because one time when I met a guy, he said, it was just a stranger I met in the street, we were talking, he said, what's your name? And I gave him my Senegalese last name. He went, ah, you really like to eat. And so I said, ah, and you really like, you know, and so we went back and forth with each name kind of has a stereotype tied to it. And that's a lot of fun. Malik will always say, with the chebujin, now, when we eat it, we ask the lady who prepares our national dishes to use less oils because they put a lot of oil in the prep. And so Malik says, it's not real chebujin. It's not real fish and rice unless you reach in there and you squeeze it and the oil is just running down your hand, you know, and so, and you're licking it off your finger. And it's, so we, it's a little bit too much oil for me, but we enjoy it nonetheless.
I was going to throw something in there too, that you're talking about new missionaries. And I had to learn this, is that it's very common for the Dominicans, when you go visit them as a pastor, to have something for you, even if they didn't make it, even if it's just crackers and cheese and, you know, ham or something. You know, it's just very, it's very proper, even for the poorest people who don't have any money, to send out to go get a Coke for you, or because it's just, it's a way that you're hospitable in their culture. And one of the things I learned, especially even when they're making, that you show up close to lunchtime or whatever, you know, you need to eat some. Like, you need to eat something. Like, it's, you know, in America, we're like, oh, no, thanks, don't worry about it. And there's something Americans were like, all right, he doesn't want it. You know, we accept that in our culture. You know, you offer, but if someone doesn't want it, they don't want it. It's fine. That's not how it is in the Dominican. You need to eat some. And there were, I remember one missionary teammate of mine was there at one time, and we were in a very poor person's home. And I am not really sure how well they prepare their food. And I would imagine it's nowhere close to how we would prepare food. And I looked at him, I was like, you got to have some, man. You got to have some. I was like, don't throw it up, and you got to eat some. And he did a good job. Yeah. I was really proud of him. And by the end of it, he's like, that was pretty good. I'm like, yep. And we'll pray all the way home that we don't have any issues. But you really are going to be offensive if you don't receive their hospitality in a kind way.
Yeah, it's such a big part of so many cultures, is expressing that hospitality through food and serving. And it's the same thing in Senegal. Even if they run to the boutique, the corner little market, and grab a Coke or grab something that they could present. And Senegal is a country, they call themselves the country of Teranga, which is a Wolof word for hospitality. And that the deepest expression of that is in the food. It's such a communal event. It's how you build relationships. After you eat your meal, the men go off into another room, and then they start the preparation of what's called a taya, or tea. It's tea. It's a green tea with mint. And they do three servings of it, and it gets, they add more sugar, and the mint gets stronger as it goes. And they just have a special way of preparing it and pouring it. And there's always one of the guys who will prepare it. And then they pass around the little glass. You take the shot of it. And it's just a way to continue that as you're digesting your food, keep the conversation going. And you learn so much as you take those couple hours in the afternoon and you just sit down with people and you talk. And there's so much you can learn during that time. And so if you're a young missionary, yeah, definitely embrace that part of the culture of just slow down in the afternoon, enjoy a meal, enjoy that hospitality, learn to become hospitable that way when you receive people. Our director, Eric Bowman, he said, hey, your home needs to be a place where you are, where you can have a haven, a getaway. But you also want to have an area where you can receive people. And so whether you have an area where you minister, where you can set it up to where you can receive people, serve tea, serve a little, you know, crackers or something. When we built our building, we built it to look like a house. And in the middle of our house, we live on the second floor, but nobody really comes up to our apartment, but we receive people on the first floor. We can serve them tea. We can sit down. We have couches laid out. We can sit down, bring out some snacks. Julie comes down and serves, you know, some snacks or things like that. If you walk into a grocery store and it's lunchtime, the staff will be sitting around a bowl, eating on a bowl on a mat on the floor. And they'll say, Kailek, come eat. And they're serious. They'll clear a spot for you. And you'll go on, Lek nares akjam. I've already eaten, but may you have a good digestion, you know. But they'll invite you in and sit down and eat with them. And I've learned that, man, when they clear a spot for you and you want to make a connection, you sit down and eat with them and you're friends for life. You know, even if they're complete strangers. Yeah. And so, embrace that part of the culture. Let's close with this. Is there anything that you ate, or any part of Dominican cuisine that you're like, I don't know if I can do this, but you went ahead and did it? Or is it pretty?
There's tons of Dominican food that, that I don't particularly love. Now, that's the great thing is there's so much of it that I do like. But I mean, they have so much. One of the things I'll just say that I always see that they love plantains here. And they make some great plantains, whether they chop it up and fry it, which is like, you know, almost like little discs. It's really good. Salt's kind of like a fried potato. They also do sweet plantains, which is awesome. But what they also do is they have green bananas and they boil them and they're not any good and they're awful. And that is something they really like. And that is that, I mean, I've embraced 90% of their food and their culture, but that is just one of the things. That and like radish potato salad. It's, you know, oh, it's the worst. So, I mean, there's things that you don't like, but most people have, you know, a couple of things they don't like. And the majority of it, we just love, especially, you know, someone who likes fried foods. I love fried foods. Yeah. I love, you know, chicken and rice and all the stuff they have. But there's a few things that are just like, no thanks.
Yeah, there's nothing in Senegal. One of the advantages of being a Muslim majority country is they don't eat bizarre foods. And so there's really nothing in our country that I've been like, I don't know if I can eat that, you know, or I don't know. We did, we had the medical mission outreach brought a team out last March. And we went out to eat at a restaurant and a girl ordered fish and they bring out the whole fish head and, you know, everything. And we told her, now it's a custom here. You have to eat the eyeballs. You have to do it. It's part of it. Otherwise, they'll be offended. She's like, really? And she just about put it in her mouth and we said, no, you don't have to. She said, I'll go ahead and try it. And she popped that eyeball in her mouth and bit into it. It was like, she went, okay. But anyways, we don't really have any weird traditions.
Well, then, I mean, just like what would you say is your favorite thing? I know they have their main staple, but what's something you get there that you say, man, this is my favorite. I like this.
So for a meal, my favorite is mafé, which is, it's Senegal, it's a staple in Senegal, but they I think it comes from Mali, which is a country next to us. But it's a peanut butter sauce with a tomato base that's mixed in together. You wouldn't think it works. A lot of Hispanic dishes incorporate peanut butter sauce. There's a lot of Thai dishes that incorporate it. It's delicious when it's mixed in. It's kind of like a stew. You throw everything, sweet potatoes, regular potatoes, carrots, braised meat. And sometimes the meat can be real tough. So they pressure cook it first, then they grill it. Then they throw it in this stew and let it simmer for an hour. And it's an amazing dish. I love it. And so I could eat that every day almost. It's really good. But we enjoy all the dishes. And our kids really enjoy it too. And I want to hear what your favorite dish is. And then, but also, I think it's good to balance as well as a missionary, you know, some of your food from your home, you know, what American food, and is that accessible there? So maybe share a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Dominican food, we've talked a lot about it. You know, while we're having a regular, normal Dominican meal, rice, beans, chicken, salad, things like that, there's a little thing they call arepita, which is basically just like a fried hush puppy. And there's just something about it. I mean, there's tons of things I like about Dominican food, but when you're having a regular meal and you just get that little bit of fried hush puppy on the side, that's always a really good little addition to your meal that I just love a lot. And so Sundays oftentimes we'll go to this local store that has really great chicken horneado. We call it horneado. I can't think of the word. Not grilled chicken, rotisserie chicken. Right. And it's always a little bit more exciting from when I come home with some of those little fried hush puppies. But that being said, we still do a lot of cooking at home. And to be honest, we don't cook a lot of Dominican food at home. We have when people who worked in the house did. And we the truth of the matter is Dominican food is actually very inexpensive. So frequently we actually buy Dominican food plates of the day for literally two or three plates of the day will fill up a whole family of ours, and that costs less than $15. And so we can eat very affordably and have Dominican food. But we make American food. You know, we make your normal spaghetti and tacos and, you know, hamburgers. And but some of the things that we can't get here at your normal restaurant or store that I love back home, number one were chicken wings. They just, for whatever reason, as much chicken as they eat here, they don't know how to make really good chicken wings, or they just don't make them. And there's a particular kind of glaze, like a honey glaze. And so I learned how to make that early on. And so when we have big football games or watching our baseball games, I'll often, make a big batch of chicken wings, and the family really loves that. It's a real familial time when dad makes the chicken wings, and it takes a number of hours to kind of get them just right. And then another thing that doesn't take as much time, but we like to do as well, is we make Chick-fil-A chicken sandwiches. And it's, you know, it's a certain kind of grilled chicken sandwich we make, but nowadays you can buy the Chick-fil-A sauce. And so, you know, those kinds of things that really make you connect back home. There's something about, especially when you're that third culture kid, that you've lived in this culture, you have the American culture, you have your own culture, that really makes life fun. And I'm sure every missionary understands that. I remember that was one of the first things I noticed when I came here to the Dominican with the missionary family that I stayed with, who ironically, the wife had grown up there in Senegal. Hannah Bragg became Hannah Townsley.
Right, right.
And I remember how important food was for their daily living. And though they would have their Dominican food, the missionary husband really liked certain American dishes that she would make. And early on, I realized that is a way that you really can still connect with your old life and not feel completely separated from your identity and who you were. So food is very important in our homes.
Yeah, certainly. We do the same thing. We have, we'll do Taco Tuesdays. We do Friday night pizza movie night as a family. And usually our pizza night, and then we'll do at least once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks, we do what we call a Culver's night. If you've ever been to a Culver's, we love Culver's when we're back in the States. And hamburger, really good hamburgers, and then the concrete mixers. And so we will go and buy some ice cream at a local bakery. It's a homemade ice cream, the vanilla, just delicious. And then the kids, we go to the store, and each kid gets to choose two toppings. We take it home. And we blend all that together, and each kid gets their own concrete mixer, and we make the smash burgers or Culver style burgers, and we enjoy all of that. So it's an important part. And I'll say this: if you're on the mission field, if you're a husband, if you have a wife and a family, and your wife is homeschooling the kids, and she is involved in different aspects of the ministry, be cognizant of the fact that in a foreign field, it takes a lot more to prep a meal. It's a lot harder to just throw something together. And so during COVID, I actually did some online courses on how to, cook and do chef. And we have a lot of French influence in Senegal, and I love French cuisine. They have sauces with every meal. So I learned to do different sauces and would prepare things like that. And so if you're a husband, be aware of that. And, I try to help out with meals every once in a while. When I have the time, we try to take turns and do different things. And then get your kids involved, get your family involved, because food is such a part of building community and building family that that's a great time for us to bond as a family. Is gathering together and choosing a meal and then prepping that and making that together. And so it's a great opportunity on the field to do something as a family.
My family, if they ever actually listen to this podcast, will be appalled if I don't remind what we do every Sunday night. For the most part, we call it our Cracker Barrel dinner. For those of you who love Cracker Barrel, we don't have Cracker Barrel here. One of the great things about Cracker Barrel is you can have breakfast all day long. And so what we do generally when we come back in from church on a Sunday night, we'll have what we call Cracker Barrel dinner. And we have collected, over the month, whether it be, we're going to have eggs and bacon and toast and maybe some hash browns, or like this last Sunday I did pancakes. We do some sort of breakfast meal at night. We call it Cracker Barrel dinner. So we ask Alexa to play some basically banjo music. And we just every Sunday night, it's Cracker Barrel dinner. And we have coffee and orange juice. And it's like you're at Cracker Barrel on a Sunday night. And kids really love that. In fact, this year we went back to the States and we had Cracker Barrel. For whatever reason, it just happened that the quality of the Cracker Barrels we went to the two times wasn't necessarily great. And I'm like, we miss our Cracker Barrel dinner back in the Dominican. So those are special memories we have forever.
Yeah, that's great. Well, good. Boy, I've really enjoyed this. And yes, I am ready to go get a bite to eat. Yeah, definitely. So we're going to head out. Well, Eric, I've enjoyed this session. I've just kind of a light session on talking about food and stuff, but it's an important part. It's a big part of being a missionary.
Last thing, and while you're ending this, it's not only a big thing. I don't know how it is for you, Josh, but for me, there's almost no better icebreaker when talking to other men, especially on the mission field, than talking about food. And one of the things we talk about most of the time when it's not spiritually related is food. And so it's important to us and it's important to other people.
No, it's true. I've had police officers pull us over. They're always trying to find something to give you a ticket for. And when I tell them, come on over, my wife will make you some chebijin. We always get, they're like, oh, you know how to make chebijin. You can make it. And she's like, oh yeah, come on over. They're like, all right, I'll be over. And then, all right, on your way, you know. And so it's definitely, it's great. Well, hey, we appreciate our audience and we appreciate our listeners. I know as I'm back in the States doing furlough, we're going to pick up some new listeners. And so, hey, if you're listening, be sure to like and subscribe. You can check out our YouTube channel and subscribe over there if you want to watch the video. And if you want to listen to it, we're on Apple, we're on Spotify, most of the major streaming services. Be sure to share this with your friends or anybody else you think might be interested in this podcast. And send in your information, send in any questions you might have that you would like us to address about missionary life, some of the challenges on the mission field, things like that. We're always looking for topics to address, whether you're a member of a church interested in missions, whether you're a missionary about to go to the field, or whether you're a veteran missionary. Send in some of your topics that you'd like to discuss. And we're looking forward to this year and just all the topics Eric and I are going to be talking about. I've got all kinds of interviews set up for this year as I'm traveling around. I'm excited to share those. And so, hey, we are looking forward to seeing how this will continue to grow and be used. And if anything, Eric, I just love having these moments to chat with you.
Absolutely. And if you want to send some recipes in, we're always looking for new recipes as well. So this is Eric from the Dominican Republic, and we have Josh via Senegal in America, right?
That's right, here in Fostoria, Michigan. And hey, thanks for tuning in, watching, or listening. God bless. Have a great day.